There's a thousand further women living down there. They're all living, the devil may care. Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair. So viva Las Vegas! Viva Las Vegas!
Thank you, Wayne Newton, for that fabulous intro. You're listening to Katz with the Dish. This is John Katz Lomitas. I write the Katz Report in the Las Vegas Sun, lasvegassun.com. I write for Las Vegas Weekly. I write for Vegas Magazine. I write for all the titles in Greenspun Media Group, including The Sunday, the weekly news magazine that comes out on The Sunday, except when it comes out on The Saturday. I'm flying solo this week again because Trish McCrone is hawking vehicles in Scottsdale. That is no lie. She's actually doing this. She will be back with me, thankfully, next week. So we're going solo, but not entirely. My guest this week plays Johnny Cash in Million Dollar Quartet. He's an original member of the cast of the show when it opened at Harrah's in February of 2013. He's got something else going on January 31st, his own show at Cabaret Jazz at the Smith Center. Welcome the extraordinarily talented and reliably well-groomed Ben Hale.
Well, hello.
How about that for an intro, buddy?
That was great. I appreciate it.
Benjamin Hale. Well, thank you for being in here, first of all, Ben.
Absolutely.
I know he's extraordinarily busy for you right now.
It's all right.
And you're, as the introduction indicated, a multifaceted, multi-talented guy. And let's roll right into, first of all, let's talk first about the Million Dollar Quartet and how you got into that cast, if we can start there.
Absolutely.
We knew you from, oddly enough, you were in Phantom, the Las Vegas Spectacular, for 6 years, playing, you played...
I was the understudy for
Raoul.
The and the swing
Raoul.
For all the the men in the show.
Yeah, and you knew all the roles.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so then the next time we see you is in the rehearsals for Million Dollar Quartet as Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
Bridge that gap for me, will you? How did you get into the Million Dollar Quartet?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Phantom had ended, and I had heard about this show, Million Dollar Quartet, and, you know, the touring group had come through town, and I saw it, and I thought, I've got to audition for that show. It is so good. And actually happened to be the audition was the day that I went and saw it.
Oh, wow.
But I had...
strike while the iron's hot, right?
I had auditioned for the role of Carl Perkins, and... while I play the guitar and sing and all that stuff, I just wasn't the right fit for what was going on. And they asked me, would you be, how low can you sing? And I thought, well, I don't know. I haven't sung low in a while. So I...
That's something you have to come with. You have to sing low to show
to
them. You can't
low.
Just say, I can sing this particular range. You have to go low.
You have to vocally. Go low. Mm-hmm. But I'd never really... attempted that vocal prowess. And so I started singing and lower and lower, and all of a sudden I find, guess what, I've got that range. And they read me for that role, and the audition went really well because it landed the job.
Yeah.
And it was really a fascinating audition experience for me.
You've got a deep background in education and study in mm-hmm. In live theater and musically.
Absolutely.
Run through your education resume, if you will. I know you've said you're a professional student at one point in your life.
Well, here's the interesting thing. My grandparents actually started a theater in Glendale, California, that is currently holds the position for the longest running center stage theater in America.
Wow. In the whole country?
Yes.
Okay.
Center stage, maybe it's center stage community theater, but it is the long, it's been around for a long time. So it's in my blood. And my grandma would always ask me to be in plays, and I was a little shy. I won't lie. Wasn't my thing to get in front of people. And so I did, anytime the grandma asked to be in a show, I'd show up and do a little cameo or whatever.
what kind of roles were you playing at that point?
Anything. The neighborhood kid who goes and steals cookies. My grandma
I see you running around the stage and doing some mischief.
Just mischief. And I was never good. I didn't know what to do with it. But my dad also started a theater in Orem, Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And at age 14, he says, son, it's time for you to get a job. you can go look. Or you could run sound and run lights here at the Hale Center Theater.
That's what it is, the Hale Center Theater.
The Hale Center Theater.
Love it.
And I opted to give that a shot because, I thought, oh, cool, I get to work the sound and run the lights. That's a lot of power to command.
How old were you then?
You know, 14, 15, 16, child labor laws.
Okay. Well, it was at the beginning of the of your career. And that's a good position to be in if you want to make a career out of it, because you understand lighting and sound. And you know, from being on stage, you can recognize what is and isn't working, right?
Yeah. So I sat behind the soundboard and the lighting board and observed and observed and observed and kept my silence. for a while, you know, I was a little shy, and I remember my dad at one point, probably around 14, 15, gave me a guitar for Christmas. It was his old beat up Ovation guitar, cracks, smelled like cigarettes, and the frets were all out of whack, and the strings were way high off. If I was trying to learn slide guitar, it would have been a perfect guitar, but I was just trying to learn chords, and it was just very difficult. But I fell in love with playing the guitar, and I practiced, and I was an excellent bathroom singer.
I got to ask, what happened to this guitar? Is it still in your life?
It fell apart.
It lived a nice, healthy life.
I brought it to a guitar tech, and the guitar tech's like, well, let's take a look. And it ended up hanging in there for like 2-3 years, and nothing ever happened to it. And I just left my life. That's that. But it sure built up my calluses, I'll tell you. But yeah, you know, it's interesting. So I have this theater background, and also my dad was a rock and roll singer before he started the theater. He was on MTV. He was signed to Curb Records. He had less than a one-hit wonder, did a lot of great vocal work for, you know, commercials and things like that. Oddly enough, he did the George of the Jungle. Because anytime he'd be in the studio and he'd kind of derail vocally, he would do that just to be funny and to make a graceful exit or a less graceful exit. They call
change it up a little bit in other words, right?
So anyhow, I was raised around rock and roll and good, solid rock and roll classics and the Beatles and Zeppelin and all of the good stuff. And so carrying on my education, I went to Dixie State College. While I was at Dixie State College, I lived with my grandparents, who were huge fans of Johnny Cash, John Wayne, and any cowboy incarnation. You know, I really learned to love watching all those old westerns and Marty Robbins songs.
So the Cash character is more probably you than anything you did, especially in Phantom, right? It speaks more to what you're used to portraying, I guess.
Yeah, it's half and half. It's interesting because there's on the one side, musical theater is like ingrained. I know the canon of, you know, classic musical theater, and on the other hand, I know the classic side of rock and roll. And I can't ever really be satisfied without doing both simultaneously.
Yeah, so it's an interesting mix. I thought that immediately when I saw you, that you had been cast for Johnny Cash.
Yeah,
you know, I was like, wow, this is going to be interesting to see how this works. Yeah.
And I had no idea, you know, and it was just kind of fun because a lot of the education and all the work had kind of been done in the subconscious without knowing. So I got up there and I was starting to sing that Johnny Cash, and all of a sudden it just clicked. It felt very natural and felt very comfortable. And it just resonated more.
Mm-hmm. What's the biggest difference for you in vocally and in appearing on stage in the two shows? Mm-hmm. I mean, there has to be some kind of, is there a difference in preparation? I know the costuming obviously is different. The story is way, way different, but
for
you as a singular performer, how is it different being in a Phantom show and being in this rock and roll portrayal?
Yeah. You know, Phantom is it's an iconic classic musical theater piece. And so a lot of people know that. But there's a little wiggle room for interpretation in terms of who the character is. Of course, you want to follow the rules of the director and all of that, backstory and all of that. Whereas Johnny Cash is instantly recognizable. Everybody knows him and his story very well, at least more so than the Raoul character, you know.
There's no Raoul station on Pandora.
We never got to know Raoul's last name. If it was Raoul Cash or Raoul something, it might have been different, but we never even got to know his last name. Oh, no, wait. There is a name. Raoul de Vicomte de Chalny. There it is. There it is.
So he's a wealthy aristocrat. An actual
name? Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Raoul Vicomte de Chalny. you know. I don't even know if I'm saying it right.
Nobody will. Well, Andrew Lloyd Webber is a listener, and I'm sure if you are pronouncing it wrong, he'll let us know.
Yeah.
We got to do this, Ben. We got to take a quick break here and allow Josh Bell to chime in with his weekly movie reviews. But it's me and Ben Hale on Cats with a Dish. Stick around. I know we will.
This is Terry Fader, and I'm Larry Fabulous. You're listening to Cats with a Dish.
Hey, you're early.
Where's the damn video?
Why are you so angry?
What you did in my classroom today?
You've been avoiding me.
What do you think? This is some kind of game we're playing here? This is real life. That is my home. Okay, you're doing things in front of my kid, in front of my husband?
That's Jennifer Lopez as hot older woman Claire and Ryan Guzman as her teenage stalker Noah in The Boy Next Door. I'm Josh Bell, film critic for Las Vegas Weekly, with a look at what's new in theaters this week. After one ill-advised night of carnal passion, middle-aged teacher Claire finds herself being stalked by her hunky, unstable neighbor Noah. With its painfully obvious plot twists and moronic characters, The Boy Next Door is so terrible that it's actually quite funny at times, thanks especially to Guzman's intensely wooden performance. The rest of the actors don't fare much better, not that the dialogue is worthy of decent acting. I give The Boy Next Door 1.5 stars out of 5. Also opening this week is Cake, featuring a Golden Globe and SAG Award-nominated lead performance from Jennifer Aniston, who does her best as a bitter lawyer suffering from chronic pain in the aftermath of a vaguely defined accident. Her performance is the best part of this mediocre movie, a listless indie drama that never goes much of anywhere, with moments that are framed as revelatory but contain little in the way of revelation. I give Cake 2.5 stars out of 5. And finally, boxing documentary Manny opens this week at the AMC Town Square and is also available on demand. This glossy documentary about boxing champion Manny Pacquiao is informative but mostly superficial. The hero worship, complete with overblown narration by Liam Neeson, outweighs the occasional doubt or criticism, which is raised and then quickly forgotten. I give Manny 2.5 stars out of 5. That's a look at what's new in theaters this week. Check out my reviews in Las Vegas Weekly and my blog at joshbellhateseverything.com.
Welcome back. Sitting with me now is Ben Hale. He plays Johnny Cash in Million Dollar Quartet, and he's got a show coming up on January 31st at the Smith Center. Cabaret Jazz, right?
Yes.
Okay. It was almost put you in the wrong room. Reynolds
I
Hall.
Like both rooms. They're both great.
That's a whole different deal.
Yeah.
Maybe someday, Reynolds Hall. Cabaret Jazz. What time is the show?
The show, there's two shows, actually. There's one at 5 o'clock and one at 8 p.m.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, how is it? You're doing the Johnny Cash bit, and I've seen you and a couple of times with your band, the Crimson Balladeers, which tear it up pretty well. And you also back Kristen Herzenberg and have who's now playing the main role of Diane in Million Dollar Quartet, which is also a Phantom alumni.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to see out of the Cabaret Jazz show?
Well, this show is really interesting to me. It's going to be a night of cosmic American music. Now, cosmic American music, a lot of people don't really know what that means.
I know what it's like to be cosmic. You'd have to get cosmic.
You know, it doesn't make a lot of sense because, you know, cosmic means outside of the planet. But, you know, it was a coin actually termed by Gram Parsons.
Okay.
Gram Parsons, a classic country, you know, hillbilly hippie, who really did some great music. And he summarized cosmic American music as basically the best of gospel, blues, country, kind of combined into a hybrid of, you know.
Yeah.
It's a really good gumbo of rhythm and blues. Kind of all of the genres is kind of put into one little thing.
Yeah. A little bit like the Million Dollar Quartet.
Yeah, in a way.
Is, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's a night that I will be, you know, performing some of my originals. And this is my first solo show as Ben Hale.
Yeah.
Making a statement.
This is not the Crimson Balladeers.
This is not.
It's you as the main guy.
Correct. Mm-hmm. However, I may have some guests that, you know, who've helped either co-write or collaborate. And so it'll be a real fun evening. But it'll range from, you know, we'll have Sam Cooke songs to Ray Charles to Marty Stewart. You know, all sorts of
wow,
hillbilly to gospel to soul, and then of course a fair amount of originals that I feel hold their own and have a real good way of communicating the emotion behind the lyric.
Now, with the band, you do originals.
Absolutely.
Are these originals that you've done with the Balladeers? Who are these? Are these expressly
We do a little bit of both. We do a little bit of both. And you know, we'll do a couple of Balladeers tunes, and we'll do a couple of Ben Hale tunes, and I can't say enough about the band. It's
let's talk about that.
Who's in it? Band. Okay, so at the drums, we've got Rob Whited. Now, Rob Whited is he's in a lot of groups around the town. He is actually the drum tech or drum tech for the Killers for quite a while. Drum tech and percussion. He's a phenomenal drummer, and he plays another group called Bombay Heavy, and just some. He's a phenomenal drummer, and he's got an amazing beard. He looks like one of Jacques Cousteau's like submarine buddies. But he's just one of the most genuine. Yeah, he's
there's
phenomenal.
A reference for you.
But he plays drums like the way that Levon Helm just lay into something, and he's just got a unbelievable.
Beats him like they owe him money.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just it's fascinating to watch him play.
Okay,
on the bass, Kyle Adore is holding down the low end. He's a great guy. I just got hip to him just recently, and he's played with a group called Mama Zeus.
They've been around for a while.
Yeah, for a while, and he's a phenomenal rock bassist, but he can play everything, and he's just awesome.
Okay.
Joel Ferguson is somebody I love to collaborate with regularly. Now Joel Ferguson, Mr. Pedal Steel himself. He's a man. He plays pedal steel like Dwayne Allman played slide guitar. And he's just got this really unique angle on that instrument that nobody is doing. And
when did you get turned on to him?
You know, I heard Joel playing. Like, I saw him a bunch of times before I got up the guts to ask him to play with me. But I actually met him and was able to actually carry on a conversation with him when I was doing a project with Clint Black, the country singer.
Yeah.
It was a project that's kind of on the down low, but it was something that was a really great opportunity for us in Vegas to work with these great Nashville, great Nashville writers and musicians. So that's where I met Joel, and we immediately hit it off, and we've been collaborating, writing, jamming, exploring the blues odyssey.
I came in to him relatively recently, to the Composer's Showcase. I saw him performing, you know, and I remember sitting at the table. I happened to be sitting with Clint Holmes, and we're watching him, and we're like, this guy's sick. I mean, he's really, and Clint was like, I've got to figure out a way to get him into my show, because he's a regular, you know, and does his regular gigs at the Smithsonian. You end up using him in his show as a guest.
Oh yeah, absolutely. He'll show up out of the blue, and he's just this unassuming, great guy from, where is he from? He's from the South. He's a Georgia peach. That's where he's from. He's just got this calm vibe about him. But like, you tell him to, all right, cut loose, and he will take it to town, and you know, people go crazy. The roof like flies off the building.
And he's up there just flooring it, and it's like no big deal to him.
Yeah, no sweats.
He's
smiling.
Like, it's like, you know, he's like, you know, he has a cup of coffee going,
and then he'll do this thing that'll just, he'll tear in your beer, slow, melodic stuff that'll just cut you right to the quick, and I love it. So he's on pedal steel. Let's see, I'm trying to remember. I've got a lot of people
on
this.
Keys
one.
On this?
Oh yeah, Matt Green is the keys player. He's also our music director.
Okay,
Matt Green plays with. I'm trying to remember. He plays with all sorts of groups. He does a lot of stuff at the Funk Jam, if I'm correct.
Oh okay, yeah, I know those guys.
He's a B3 madman. He plays that Hammond organ like nobody's business.
There are not many of them left, are there?
I know.
B3 madman.
Oh, B3 madman, man. Between the B3 madman and the pedal steel and then Jacques Cousteau, I mean, right now. This is something.
This show
to
is right out of 1975.
Oh man!
Says the would-be Johnny Cash. Yeah. Are you sure you're even in the right decade?
Who knows? it'll be surprising. I think you will be surprised by how there is a nice forward-thinking vibe to this group, but there's also this kind of hearkening, there's a lot of that kind of music going on right now. Like St. Paul and the Broken Bones does all this great rhythm and blues.
Yeah.
And we're like, you know what? They do that. We can do that, but we're going to do our own angle. Mm-hmm. And
as long as somebody's keeping it alive at that level, at the national level, you have a shot at it.
Exactly. Yeah. So Matt Green is just phenomenal, and I can't say enough about him as a person, as a music director, and as a musician. Mm-hmm. So that's a real treat. And we're going to have a real B3 with the Leslie speaker spin in the air, and it's going to be
no
a humdinger.
Wow, that's going to be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got some vintage instruments going on.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we've got four backup singers.
Okay.
And Jolana Adamson, or Jolana Sampson, whatever you want to call her. She's phenomenal. She's one of the owners of the Cockroach Theater. Mm-hmm. She's a wonderful singer, wonderful writer. And we're just excited to have her singing with me. Her sister, Kashina Sampson, is going to be singing some alto.
Okay.
She's just finished a nice run with some cruise ships and stuff, but she has got this vocal quality that's similar to Stevie Nicks, but it's her own thing, but it's like, it's really genuinely an enjoyable voice, and a voice that you go, that is somebody who is a unique singer, and I love it.
Right on. Okay.
So, and then Lisa Davis. Lisa Davis is going to be singing backup for us as well, and she does a lot of stuff in the community. She thinks she does stuff over at NPR.
Okay.
And Paul Baird from the Smith Center, it's his wife, and she's no stranger to Texas music, and she's phenomenal.
I don't know that. I wonder if she's been on stage at those.
She sang with Kristen.
Okay.
She sang back it with us.
Right on.
And we've just
one big happy family over
it
there.
It kind of has grown to this fun conglomerate of really unique artists, and it's just become a really wonderful thing.
How does it work, Ben? I've talked to those who have done side projects at Cabaret Jazz, you know, including Kristen. Travis Clower has been in there.
Absolutely.
You know, Phil Fortenberry. Mm-hmm. You know, people who are nails as artists.
Oh yeah.
And what is it like to go into that? I mean, it's like a business question.
Yeah.
How do you benefit business-wise from going into the Smith Center with a side project? Because I believe this is the case with you, it's the case with them, that you have to front you have to pay for the production costs.
You do.
And you have to front that. And a lot of people think that call that four-walling, which the Smith Center does not call it that. But it's that kind of, you're almost like renting the room for yourself.
Right.
How do you feel about that, and how does it make sense to you?
Well, you know, there's something about that room in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Cabaret Jazz is one of my favorite sounding rooms.
Yeah.
Just acoustically, and the vibe is amazing. It's that Art Deco.
Yeah.
And
everything's deco at the Smith Center.
Yeah, yeah.
Bathrooms are deco.
I love it.
Waste baskets
are decoed out.
Myron is deco. Everybody's deco.
but there's this sonic quality, and this intimacy. And on top of it, you've got a staff who cares about their product, which is whatever goes in that room is theirs, and they own it. Kevin Harvey is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Both of the Kevins.
The Kevin 1 and Kevin 2.
Kevin 1 and Kevin 2.
Yeah.
So there's
terrific job they do. The sound especially, I know you know what I'm talking about. They've had, you know, Lon Bronson and Dave Perico in there with their big horns, and it's worked. They have Clint's show. It's a very, you know, nuanced show. It works. You're going to come in there.
Yeah.
They're going to dial that in with all those vintage instruments and your voice and four backup singers. It's going to be nails. I know.
It's going to be a humdinger.
Mm-hmm.
And so performing in that room is something that is a privilege, and it's something wonderful because you can hear a pin drop, and not only the pin drop, but 5 minutes after the pin drops and does, you know, all the fancy moves and the band hits the ending of the chord, that roof goes flying off, and the audience is as receptive as an audience as you can get.
So this is worth it for you.
Oh,
this
absolutely.
It's an investment in your solo
ideas. I feel like it's a really strong place to communicate. And that's what you get there.
Interesting way to put it.
Mm-hmm. People are there to listen and to soak up every word that you sing, every note, every sound.
Yeah, you're an interpreter of songs. I mean, you're not just a singer. You, because of your theater background.
Yeah.
I mean, you're delivering a multi-leveled performance, not just reciting lyrics.
Yeah, it's absolutely about trying to communicate an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes if it's not a pretty idea, I don't care as long as it communicates.
Mm-hmm.
That's
Where do you write? How do you write songs?
I write from, you know, I'll see a newspaper article that'll kind of spark my fancy, or I'll see a one line here or there, or you'll just kind of get a little snap of inspiration. Mm-hmm. I write from my own experience. And then sometimes because of the theater background, I'll go, I wonder what it would be like if I was this person or this character or under this circumstance. And then I just let the pen do the talking. Mm-hmm. And the melody dictates a lot too, the chords and just the overall mood that I try to achieve.
Right. And you can write from anywhere? Does it matter where you are physically?
No. I like, you know, my iPhone is a really handy dandy device.
I wonder how you guys wrote songs before iPhones were out. I know all the songwriters so I know, they come up with an idea and immediately they're in their notes, you know, and yeah. They're starting to...
I mean, I'll write things on napkins, I'll write mm-hmm. things, but the iPhone captures the melodic content. And that's really helpful. So I'll just, you know, I was driving in the car the other day and I was like, I ain't familiar with your line of thinking and your presupposing that I disagree. And I was like, what is coming out of my mouth? But I'm just making up this crazy little song in my head. And then all of a sudden
an original lyric there.
I'm working on this tune.
Do you wonder, a lot of songwriters wonder if that's something I had to have heard at some point, right?
Oh, you wonder. And... I go through my catalog and I'm like, did I rip that from somebody? I sure hope I didn't. But I'm like, where am I getting this? It's like this strange white boy gospel song. I ain't clapping your hands. I ain't familiar with your line of thinking. Anyhow, and I brought it. I was able to actually go in and work on that particular song.
Did you have that thought in your head that you weren't familiar with somebody's line of thinking and it just happened to be set to music? Was that not to get too personal.
Right. It's just this funny thing that these lyrics pop out. And I was like, what am I talking about? And I all of a sudden, the meaning comes alive, and I had an opportunity to record that particular song with Olivia Newton-John's backing band.
Right. They were
the Composer Showcase.
You Composer Showcase, the last one of these. Mm-hmm. Well, I know you have been at this recording. You have been at Composer Showcase mm-hmm. On Wednesday night. And again, the details as we wrap up the show on the show on the 31st, it's 5 p.m.
Correct.
First show
mm-hmm.
and 8
Yes.
PM, the second show, mm-hmm. Cabaret Jazz. And to go to find tickets, you just go to the Smith Center website.
Smith Center website. You can hit me up on Facebook, Twitter.
Yeah, we will do that. Things. You're a late comer to Twitter,
I know.
Twitter, by the way.
Thanks for Benjamin your help Hale. On encouraging me to be a Twitter.
I'm gonna be tweeting right after we talk here. Follow Ben, please. He needs all the help he can get on Twitter. Great artist, but he's really behind on Twitter. All right, Ben. Well, thanks for coming down. And
thank
we will
you.
See you on the third. We will have seen you already, but on the 31st at your shows. And we'll talk further about everything else you've got going on when time permits.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
You betcha.